Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I am Cody, and today we're going to continue the theme for August, which is awesome bands. Again, these five bands were very instrumental to me with my musical burgeoning likes, I guess. I don't know how to say it. It's basically these five bands opened my ears to new stuff and bridged a very large opening, or I say bridge, but linked a very large opening to newer and other bands that became later on became some of my favorite bands too. But they were the gateway, as you could say, to certain things. Last week we talked about the Aquabats. This week will be much more of a older band. This is the Misfits. I did not know of them when they first started, because yet I was not born. So that's not that. I caught onto them in I discovered them in junior high, way back when. For the people who are, I guess, doing the math in their heads, I'll save you some time in thinking about that. Actually, I guess really. I discovered them in a way that I discovered some of my most favorite bands by somebody else. The Aquabats are that same way. The Misfits are definitely no exception to that that way. So in the wee hour or the wee years of my, I want to say it was seventh grade. Seventh grade. There was this kid in a wood shop who was playing a song that grabbed me right away when I heard it. He was playing it on his little shitty, of all things, it was essentially a cassette tape. I can't think of the name right now, from Home Alone, Talk Boy. Because it has a speaker on it, you can play it. I don't know why he had that, but he was playing it. And it was a song that, if you're familiar with the Misfits, you will know. But it's a song that is hugely popular by any means. To me, it was my first time hearing it, and it blew me away. The song that I speak of came off of arguably their best album that most people would say. It's not my favorite, that's, you know, nothing bad about it, but the song that I heard was Astro Zombies. Astro Zombies is a fairly popular song that many people know. I can't really tell you why it grabbed me so much when I heard it. It was just this very bizarre mix of punk rock, which I was into quite a bit, and like had this I don't want to say surf tone to it, but it's very surf sounding guitar style too. It's very, very bizarre mix of these types of music that I was like, yo man, I've never talked to you before, what are you listening to? And he's from my wood shop. We were in wood shop when he was listening to it. We were out of class going to, I want to say it was lunch, and I skipped lunch that day, and that's why I remember it so well, is we listened to all of his tape that he had, and it was actually a mix of recordings from the first two albums that were released. So Walk Among Us and Earth AD / Wolf's Blood. Those two, he had this, he basically told me about his brother told him about this band. He gave him this mixtape that essentially had, it was almost like if you ever go and go back and listen to any of the compilation albums they released. I believe it's self-titled collection. It's a yellow and black cover, which is like a greatest hits compilation, I should say, or I can't really say greatest hits, but it was a compilation album. And he actually let me borrow the tape. I went home and copied it. By the way, for the people out there who don't know what a tape is a cassette tape that you could record as an it was a magnetic medium we used to use back in the day. And luckily, I had a stereo at home that had the ability to copy tapes. It was a two tape deck. And you put one in one side, and you put a blank one in the other, and you hit the record and play button and the record on one side, and there's this little button, like little depress button you push in. And when you do that, it starts them at the same time and records while playing, awesomely, the whole thing. Now, if you press the toggle button down, it actually did it in faster time. So you press those buttons, and boom, in about 5 or 10 minutes, you have both sides of the tape recorded very quickly, and that's how I got my first taste of the Misfits, and I burned through that tape quite a bit, and then I talked to my outlet for music back then, my uncle, who then even more so broke the walls down for me and said, "Oh, the Misfits, huh?" Because he's the one that introduced me to Bad Religion, which is one of my favorite bands, but nothing had gripped me and really motivated me to listen more than that I had for the Misfits. It blew me away. And then I want to say, going through their albums, I remember buying American Psycho when it came out, and American Psycho came out. But I think the first one I actually ever bought was Collection 2, which to me is my favorite compilation album that they've released. It has essentially all the songs that anybody who really is briefly heard the Misfits has heard these songs. It includes a song that most people don't associate with them, which is Last Caress. Yes, that's a Misfits song. The only song on this album that was not written by Glenn Danzig was Rat Fink, but all the other songs were all original songs, and I was so ridiculously obsessed with this album that I think I ruined one of them. Because I kept playing it in different things, and it was all I would listen to night and day, every day, for I would say months at a time. And I just didn't understand why anybody else didn't know who this was and how they weren't bigger than they were. And then, like I said, American Psycho came out. It was a little different of an album. Some people would say a worse album. I actually dig this album quite a bit. I like to break down the Misfits in two different categories. There's Glenn Danzig and the Misfits, and then there's everybody else in the Misfits. This falls into the category of everybody else in the Misfits. So this includes Doyle, Wolfgang Von, Frankenstein on guitar, Jerry Only on bass. The vocals were done by Michael Graves, who people were like, either, I think they either hated him or loved him. I loved him. It was a drastically different take on the songs. The thing I liked about it is the fact that it still kept that horror feel that a lot of the Glenn Danzig songs had in it, but it was a very different tempo in music. It was very very close to a lot of the other. It was very much closer to like the looser sounds that like the Ramones had, and very heavy guitar that like White Zombie had. And that's due to the fact that it was produced by somebody else besides the Misfits, and that gentleman's name is Daniel Ray, who worked with, oddly enough, the Ramones and the White Zombie. Hence the reason they had quite a bit of sound. I don't want to say mixture, but very, very much like that. To me, had a very amazing change to it. But it was very different than from a lot of the other stuff that they had out. So some people didn't like it very much. But I dug it a lot. I will still, to this day, tell people that I believe that it was a different sound, but it was a really good sound, and I still dug them a lot, and I liked them a lot. They, for the most part, Misfits have disappeared throughout history or throughout time, and they've kind of come back in different forms. There was a very large gap in the late 80s, early 90s, where there were no, there was nothing released by the Misfits. Like I said, they did a lot of things in that time. They released collections, like Collections 2, which is, again, the one I loved so much, because it was, I got to hear a lot of the songs that I never really heard before, because I never had anything else besides that. And later on, I went through and got I went and collected all the other ones. So I have Walk Among Us, I have Earth AD / Wolf's Blood. And then there's the one that was released on my birthday in 1997. Yes, that's right, two albums in 1997. Static Age. Static Age is so basically all the songs written by Glenn Danzig and he did the vocals. It had, oddly enough, essentially the original, three of the original band members, other than the drummer, who was a different player. This one had, they were all songs from Glenn Danzig. They were, the whole thing was essentially the 19, it was 78, was when it was recorded. So technically most of the stuff was their debut stuff. So it had a lot of their older stuff on it. It was just later released, in a collection name, called Static Age. Released technically, I guess it was 96, but I remember getting it for my birthday, in 97, because I had awesome parents who would buy me stuff that I wanted back then. I can't remember the exact story about this, and I probably should have known, but it was like they were all songs that were originally recorded with the original group. It was then all mixed back in 1978. A couple of the songs were released, and then it was this version of it had a bunch of different songs that weren't originally set to be released back then, and then all released in 1997 on July 15th. So that was pretty cool. So that's the kind of breakdown of that, of the Misfits and stuff like that. So I forgot to, I kind of went away from the whole history lesson I was going to give you guys. So the Misfits is a horror punk, as they came to be later on. They're a punk rock band formed in Jersey by Glenn Danzig, who oddly enough played electric keyboard and was the singer. You had the bassist Jerry Only, and then you had drummer Manny Martinez, that originally formed it, and then later added, his name is escaping me right now. Frank went by Francescoma, Kimber's last name. I could probably pull it up. I need to, but I'm on the wrong website, and I don't have it tabbed. Anyways, so that rounded out the four of them, adding, when they added the guitarist, early in their formation, It actually meant that they didn't use the electric piano anymore. That kind of gave them a different sound. If you ever hear the original version of Cough Cool, that was recorded with electric piano keyboard with no guitar, along with Danzig singing and Jerry playing bass, and of course Manny on drums. And that was the first one. They added the more permanence, guitar, which got rid of the use of the electric piano or keyboard, and then they got kind of more of a solid punk rock sound out of it. And that's when they really started doing all the stuff that I liked a lot. Later on, the early days, Manny was replaced with a different drummer, but it doesn't really matter too much about that. He was their, I guess you could say, the kind of the golden era ish type on there. But anyways, it doesn't matter. No big deal. That's not what we're here to talk about. But Glenn Danzig, for the people who don't know, Glenn Danzig was the lead singer and one of the creators of the band. He also later on made several different bands, but obviously his biggest one was his self-titled solo project, which was named Danzig. He's made other things, Sam I Am, or Sam Haim, Sam I Am. That's a different punk band. Sam Haim, he's done a bunch of other stuff, several other things, really. But if you ask me, still the best he's ever done is The Misfits. But, you know, maybe I'm biased. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. But there was a big falling out between the creative differences that they had with Jerry and the egos that both of those guys had, if I'm not mistaken. And when they separated, Jerry kept the name The Misfits alive in various incarnations, like I said earlier, things like with the lead vocals of Michael Graves, amongst others. Jerry even did some albums in there as well as singer. Not as good, if you ask me. But he did backing vocals for most of the songs in the early days. And then he did lead vocals in the all the way through the 2000s or so, until they reunited in 2016 for two glorious shows at Riot Fest, one in Denver and one in Chicago, which I actually got to see. So I actually have seen the original Misfits. Well, not the original Misfits. The closest you can to the original Misfits, with Jerry and Glenn, along with Doyle and Dave Lombardo on drums. And then there is rhythm guitar by AC Slade. But I got to see them in Chicago, and it was all because of my friend Matt, who brainchild this whole thing going there. It was amazing. That's basically like made my day, because I've seen Danzig live. I've seen Jerry only as with the Misfits. I've seen Michael Graves with the Misfits. But I never saw Glenn Danzig with the Misfits, and I finally did, and it was amazing, and it was just beyond fantastic. One of the greatest times I've ever had in my entire life was that particular weekend. Amazing concert, or amazing festival, I should say. But bookended with the last day, the Misfits back together, and it was magical. Everyone was having a good fucking time. It was telling stories and talking about their favorites, and it was an amazing amazing thing to witness and see the massive amount of people that were at this festival. I've never actually been to a real music festival. I know it seems weird to some of you people out there who are like, Cody, you love music. Yes, I know. I've been to like Ozfest. I've been to Warped Tour several times. I've been to different radio shows that are usually a day. But being at a music festival like Riot Fest, which I knew nothing about until Matt brought up the fact that the Misfits were getting back together, and I was like, okay. But the that's that whole witnessing the love that people have and joining together and watching these bands play. And for the most part, during the day until the ends of the show where, like, the big bands play, you get a couple hundred people at each place. But then at night when you're at the big bands, like, the very last night, Sunday, was ridiculous because it was, like, White Zombie or Rob Zombie playing Astro Creep in its entirety. You had Ziggy Marley playing Exodus in its entirety. You had the Deftones. You had, I can't even think of who else is there that time. I could probably look it up again. And then you had it at the very end, you had the Misfits. And Matt and I were in the VIP area, and we were standing on the top of this picnic table, watching over the top of the crowd towards the stage. And Matt goes, "Dude, look." And I look back away from the stage, and all you can see in this park, Douglas Park in Chicago, is just a sea of people. Where before, when you were watching other bands, not from the VIP area, but from just other else, you can still see grass and field. No, not when the Misfits came on. Misfits came on, and it was nothing but people as far as you could see until it was just trees. I couldn't even see the end of the people. I didn't know there was that many people there. It was absolutely ridiculous. And then the best part was, as they're playing, you can hear the whole crowd singing to all the songs. And they played all the classics. They played everything that you wanted them to play. Essentially, they played their greatest hits. And it was phenomenal. I mean, everyone was just singing along at the top of their lungs. You have Danzig running around like a crazy sack of shit on stage. You have the fucking monstrous, that monster man that they call a man. I don't know if he's actually human, but Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein on guitar, just shredding the fuck out of this thing. And you have Jerry just ripping it through his bass. And of course, Dave Lombardo back there on drums, just fucking pecking away. By the way, Dave Lombardo, if you don't know, was the drummer for Suicidal Tendencies. He was part of Slayer, which is, I think, his longest run. Right? Longest run was on, well, his original one. Well, he started on Slayer, right? Yeah. Then went to Suicidal Tendencies at one point. He's done. It was obviously the Misfits. But Dave Lombardo's an amazing drummer. He was fucking destroying it on there too. It was amazing. And phenomenal time. And a little trivia for you guys, if you didn't know, the name The Misfits comes from a movie by the same name released in 1961, which is the movie itself is the final film of Marilyn Monroe. Why he picked that, I'm not too sure. He basically named it after that movie for whatever reason. I don't think I've ever seen the movie. I'm not a big Marilyn Monroe fan, movie-wise at least, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So that's where the name came from, if you were wondering why they called themselves, where the name The Misfits came from. That's where it was. And they do, Glenn Danzig, and Jerry Only were the... It's funny. So, the brief history before I wrap this episode up and do my last stuff here. One of my favorite things about the formation of the band is... So, Glenn Danzig, who was in a bunch of different local bands, met up with and recruited Manny for drums. And then later, Manny saw a bass guitar in the back of a car that was parked at his neighbor's house. He then found out the bass belonged to Jerry, who then asked him if he would like to play bass in their band. So he was, he basically joins the band. He got the bass guitar as a Christmas gift and had only been practicing for 2 months before he joined the band. And they, a few months later, recorded their very first single without a guitarist using the electric keyboard, or like the piano as the rhythm for the whole thing, along with Jerry on bass, in which they recorded Cool Cough. And then they released it on their own record label, played a bunch of shows. Other fun little thing about that, too, if you are lucky enough to ever see the original pressing on Blank Records of Cool Cough, Jerry's name was misspelled. His last name is misspelled. So he then was in the future credited as Jerry Only Jerry, or Jerry Only, which became a pseudonym later on. So fun little fact there. From then, in the early days, they played with amazing bands from everywhere. They became good friends with Black Flag. They opened for The Damned in New York City. They played, they went on tour with The Damned in the UK. So many different bands they played with back in the day. It was kind of crazy. But yeah, so that's it for the Misfits. I love them. I have their mascot, I guess you could really say, the Crimson Ghost. I have it tattooed on my arm. It was that skeletal figure, is referred to as the Crimson Ghost. It's from a film from way back in the day called The Crimson Ghost. If you just type in The Crimson Ghost, from 1947, somewhere around there. Anyways, you will see what it is. It's a skeletal face cloaked in a hood, and it was kind of used as their mascot. And it was featured on majority of their a lot of their albums after it was kind of taken. And of course, it's their very familiar logo, which is usually a black and white image of the outline of the face. It's the skull face itself. Anyhow, that's it for the Misfits. As for what I'm reading, as I continue on my normal thing, I wrapped up the seventh book of the Space Team series, The Planet of the Japes. Extremely funny edition. The first one to actually leave in a cliffhanger, leading into the eighth book, which I've not started reading yet. That one is cool because it's a Westworld story. And Barry J. Hutchinson, the writer of these books, I'm almost positive is completely okay with people knowing that he, I don't want to say blatantly steals, but homages the shit out of a ton of other sources here. I mean, I said way back when I first started reading them, it's like Galaxy Quest, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Star Trek, like all kind of like in there. And it's fantastic. With a lot of Spaceballs written in there too, by the way. A lot of Spaceballs, if you're familiar with Spaceballs. He definitely stole quite a bit from Westworld in this one. It's extremely hilarious. And then I started the newest Robert Langdon book, Origin, by Dan Brown. I love those books, the Robert Langdon books, mainly because of all the history and stuff, and the fact that it's terrifying when the book first starts. There's this quote from Dan, not quote, but there's this thing from that Dan Brown writes that all the places, technology, organizations, and religious stuff that are in the books, they're all real, which is insane, because if you read these books, or if you've seen the movies, like The Da Vinci Code, you you don't want to believe that that's the thing. And I kind of don't want to. I'm like, oh, that just must be, he writes that to make you think that, oh, it's all fixed. Because if it does, man, it's scurry, because like there's some really violent shit that happens for very terrible reasons in these books, and it's very disturbing, but they're really fun. And always the last couple ones, especially the one before this and this particular one, really keep you guessing on who's good and who's bad. And the thing is, eventually I'll talk more about these books in a later theme, because with these books, especially the one before this, which I'm escaping on the name right now, so I'm going to type it into the Wonder Machine that is in front of me. It had this, it had something that most books don't, I don't want to, it's, the book was called Inferno. It was recently turned into a movie. The thing about it is they, how do I put this? I don't want to spoil it for, fuck it, I'm gonna spoil it. The end of the book is unlike any book I've ever read, because the good guy, Robert Langdon, the main character of the books, doesn't win. And I say that because, well, he doesn't win. He was outsmarted, but the person in this made them play along with it. And he wasn't even around. He was dead. When all of it happened, he had jumped out of a tower, fleeing some people who were trying to stop him. But, the crazy thing about it was the aftermath of this book, the culmination, what happens in it, was astonishing. And the reason why I say that is the repercussions of what happened at the end of the book when Robert fails to stop this person from doing their thing is more devastating than an atomic bomb going off in a country. And this is what happens. So the dude, originally it's thought that he's releasing this virus that's going to kill 1/3 of the population, right? Or sometimes some people were estimating like half the population of the planet. If you know the events of the newest Avengers movie, Infinity War, the Thanos did just that, where he eliminated half the universe's, or galaxies, I don't even know how big you want to say it is, population with a snap of his fingers. This dude essentially did the same thing in a way. What he did is he released this virus that will genetically alter our DNA. So 1/3 of everyone on the planet would become sterile. Essentially meaning that, and it's a permanent thing. It's something that in the book, they explain that he believes the way he did this is he fundamentally changes our DNA. So even generations down the line, this will continue going on. And his whole thought process is we're running out of resources and room for all these people that are being born, right? And the fact that that healthcare is getting better, medicine's getting better, people are living longer lives, so there's more people on the earth, right? More babies are being born. They're not dying in early years and like in childbirth. Mothers aren't passing away in childbirth. They're having more kids than most people can handle. And then people, like I said, people are living longer. So there's a lot older people which need their own care. And so his whole process was, instead of violently killing everybody through this crazy disease that he basically based the strain on, he released this virus that changes our DNA so we have less kids. And the way this works is, and it is, he changes the human genome to basically be every one out of every three people will be sterile, but it's going to affect everybody as is. So you could become sterile and never have kids, but it's less of a choice and more of the fact that you just got the shit draw. And so he essentially made it where we could have less people because we'll have less children. Instead of doing the other, which is taking life, he just makes it so we can't create life. It is crazy to think about, because you have all those people out there who, you know, want large families. Now it's not up to them, because this mad fucking scientist has made this thing that essentially changes how our bodies can or cannot create life. Nuts. Fucking nuts. So, and the next one, Origin, is like super ridiculous. I haven't finished yet. I'm only like, I think 30 something percent in. But it's about another scientist. Well, he's a futurist, if you know what that is, who has this scientific discovery that's supposed to impact religion in all facets. And he gets murdered because of it. And Robert has to figure out what it was. And I guess if the moral implications if he releases it or not, I don't know. I'm not there yet, but it's really good. But I love the history that he packs in these books. So you learn about the place. I don't remember all of it, but I just know that it's really fun to listen to him when he describes all these crazy things in history about religion itself. And he's getting more into technology as he goes on in the books and as it goes along. There's even a mention of Uber in this newest book, which is hilarious. And Twitter and Facebook and live streaming on the internet. It's all sorts of craziness in there. Super fun books. Very historical. If you're religious, I'll highly recommend you don't read these books, because that's what they're, I don't want to say poking fun of, but that's what they're going for is the, I think Dan is a very, very, he's either agnostic or he's an atheist. I'm not too sure, but, I could be completely wrong about that too. Because the main character in it, Robert Langdon is, I believe he said he's Catholic in it. But he knows all the history of religion. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Again, we were talking about The Misfits. And next week, we will be talking about Social Distortion. So if you want to listen up before I talk all about Social Distortion and tell you a couple intimate stories about that, just like I did the other two. Next week's episode will be all about Social Distortion. This week's episode was The Misfits. And that's it for this week's episode. I am, once again, Cody, and you've been listening to The Awesome with Cody. And as usual, let's be awesome.